Welcome to the Northridge Vineyard podcast. We're a real community of people who are passionate about pursuing God and growing in our relationship with Him. We hope you enjoy this message. For more information and other resources, please visit northridge.org.au.
We're going to be looking at Exodus 1, which most people don't reach for as a Father's Day text. Wow! I mean, let's just read Exodus 1, because that's... I mean, most people are thinking of Ephesians 3 or something like that, but it's like, no, we're going to Exodus 1. I want to suggest to you this morning that actually Exodus 1 is an outstanding Father's Day text, and that in this text is actually the key to great fathering. You ready for it?
Yeah.
I'm not telling you yet. There's supposed to be a sense of build-up. I want to tell you about a time. Has anyone ever felt stuck, like really stuck in something? Have you felt stuck? It could be physically stuck. It could be emotionally stuck. It could be relationally stuck. I got very stuck once. I was caving in Bungonia. I don't know if you know where Bungonia is. It's in the Southern Highlands. There are caves down there. I was a newbie. So you get into your jumpsuit and you put on your harness and they give you a helmet and a head torch and things. And you go into a cave, and part of the entrance into the cave is actually abseiling into the cave. So it's quite a thing, abseiling in a cave. It's just very dark and cavish. And usually when you're abseiling, you know, you can look down and, oh yeah, I'm going to land there. But when you're caving, depending on the strength of your... And we had candles in those days, Daniel. Depending on the strength of your head torch, you can't actually see the bottom, and you're just descending, right? Now, one of the things about caving is that you have these bits of caving which are called squeezes. Ever heard of a squeeze? So a squeeze is a small hole, and the idea is that you go through the small hole. Now, I'd heard about the squeezes, and my level of anxiety around the squeezes and caving was fairly great before I entered the cave. And as we approached the squeeze, my level of anxiety went up. And as I went, I saw the squeeze, and you have to kind of, you know, you get down your knees, I led with my hands. I don't know if that was the right thing to do. I didn't really know any other way. So you lead with your hands, kind of work your head in, your shoulders in. And then it's kind of a matter of doing the wiggle, right? And anyways, suffice to say that as I wiggled, I began to think quite a bit about the massive rock that was above me. Quite a bit. And my anxiety about the squeeze went up and went up. And I could, you know how anxiety kind of, and I could just feel it rising in my chest and then into my muscles, and then my brain's like... So we have these things in our lives, don't we, where we get squeezed. We get squeezed. Maybe you're not wearing a jumpsuit and a headset and a harness at the time, but you can feel like there are just situations in life where you can just get kind of... whether you feel walled in, stuck, whatever it is, but it can feel like there is pressure on every side. And I think one of the questions as a follower of Jesus is like, well, what do I do in that situation? Is it that just that God changes everything straight away? Or is there actually a way to live free under that kind of pressure? In the squeeze, is there a way to live free in the squeeze? That's our question today. And I want to tell you the good news is that I think in this passage, it's a big yes, and this is how you do it passage. So, but it's narrative, which is good. And you guys will have all read this anyway, already this week, right? Because you're reading through Exodus, right? One chapter a day, that's what we're doing, right? Oh, yes. Where are we, mate? We flicked across to... Yeah, that's good. Yeah, that's where we're at too. Okay, great. So, you know when you start a new series, like when you've watched, I don't know what it is, whatever it is, like we were chronic West Wing watchers, right? And they always had the first thing... The first time you're watching an episode in the West Wing, you go, previously on the West Wing, right? You remember that bit?
Yeah.
Awesome. West Wing is awesome. We're at home. Okay. So that's kind of how it goes. And the previous on the West Wing. So when you read verses 1 through 4, what you need to hear in your head is previously on the West Wing. Okay? That's how it works. These are the names of the sons of Israel, that is Jacob, who moved to Egypt with their father each with his family: Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah, Issachar, Zebulun, Benjamin, Dan, Naphtali, Gad, and Asher. In all, Jacob had 70 descendants in Egypt, including Joseph, who was already there. So basically what he's just done is summarize the Genesis 42 through 50. So that's what happened. So that's why he's saying, previously in the West Wing. God did this stuff through Joseph. God brought the family, Jacob's family, to Israel, and now they're in Egypt. Now they're in Egypt, and then what happens next? That's our question. And what's happened? What's happened in the meantime? Because it's kind of between season one and season two. So it's not just one episode. It's actually between season one and season two, right? And then everyone's wondering, so what happened? And then this is the answer to what happened. Verse 6. In time, Joseph and all his brothers died, ending that entire generation. But their descendants, the Israelites, had many children and grandchildren. In fact, they multiplied so greatly that they became extremely powerful and filled the land. So what's happened in the meantime? They have been just... Egypt has been this incubator, basically. So they went down there, a little family on the verge of starvation, and generations have passed, and now they're huge. And it's like, wow, that's incredible. So this is the story's going well for this family, because this family is supposed to, it's got this destiny on them, this family, which is that God's going to bless the whole world through this family. So the future of this family is really important. And if this family has gone down to Egypt, just got some food and then died off, that's not good. But we're actually hearing, this family is keeping on going. This is really important. Because if the world's going to be saved, this family needs to succeed. Don't ask me why God set things up that way, but he did. That's another talk, and you talk to Chris about that. Okay. Right, Chris? He'd love that conversation, man. You'd love that. Okay, so that's kind of our setup, right? So things are actually a lot more chipper than anyone expected. These people are thriving. This is fantastic, right? And then... Exodus 8:1-8. Eventually, dun, 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 dun. Yeah, that's good, right? Eventually, a new king came to power in Egypt who knew nothing about Joseph or what he had done. Bam! Everything changes suddenly. So there's been favor, right? When the guys remembered Joseph, they're like, yeah. And the Israelites, this is cool. And then suddenly it changes. It all changes. Now, if you've lived in a country that isn't Australia, you will be familiar with this. If the local mayor in the town changes, everything changes. And you can have favor with the local mayor, and the local mayor changes, and you lose favor straight away. And that's what's happened here. It's just, or the CEO changes in a company, right? And it's just, wham, out with the C-suite, in with the new, right? Like, it's just, this is what's going on here, right? So it's like, whoosh, bang, out. This is not good news. And then we have to work out, okay, so he doesn't know Joseph, which means he doesn't know God. So that's code for he doesn't know God. So what's he like? Like, everyone's like, the new boss has come. So what's the new boss, right? Like, and then so the new boss is like this. Well, he said to the people, I was going to say Donald, but I won't. He said to his people, look, the people of Israel now outnumber us and are stronger than we are. Those immigrants, be afraid of the immigrants. They're going to ruin us. They're going to take your jobs. That's what's going on here, right? That's what they're saying. They're going to take your jobs. We must make a plan to keep our jobs and from then growing ever more. So we've got to put restrictions on migration. And if we don't, and if war breaks out against us, they're going to join and the yellow peril is going to come down. Don't you understand? And then to come across the border and it's going to be really, really bad. So that's the PR campaign that Pharaoh starts running, right? And so all the people, the thing is, he's good at his PR, right? So all the people... So read verse 11. So the Egyptians made the Israelites their slaves. You're right. They are our enemy. We should stop migration. Quick. And the ones that are here, quick, let's enslave them. So all the people, they follow Pharaoh's lead, right? He's a very influential communicator, clearly, right? He's got power and the people are like, we agree. Fear, we love fear here. Well, give us a dose of fear. So the Egyptians, so it's not just Pharaoh. It's everyone's following Pharaoh now. The Egyptians made the Israelites their slaves. They appointed brutal slave drivers over them, hoping to wear them down with crushing labor. They forced them to build the cities of Pithom and Ramesses. You can ask Chris about those as supply centers for the king. But the more the Egyptians oppressed them, the more the Israelites multiplied and spread, and the more alarmed the Egyptians became. See it? They're oppressing them, it's counterintuitive, isn't it? They're oppressing them more, and yet they're getting more scared of them. We build a big wall and yet we're more afraid of them now that we have the wall. So the Egyptians worked the people of Israel without mercy. They made their lives bitter, forcing them to mix mortar and make bricks and do all the work in the fields. They were ruthless in all their demands. Now, you want to go to the next slide, mate? There should be a slide. Is there? Have you got one before that? That's right. That's okay. Greg's been doing fabulously, and I did outsource it. So, that one. Yeah, let's go to that one. I just wanted to show you that this concept of slavery in brickyards is not something we need to use our imagination about. It's just not. If you go to India or a place in the subcontinent, I think this might be from Pakistan, actually, this photo. This is people's, like in India, they're estimated, I think it's around somewhere between 8 and 14, probably, million slaves who live in these sort of in situations that are being described in this text. So for real, and they're making bricks in a way that is very, very similar to the way that they were made in Egypt thousands of years ago. So they're packing them into those molds, they're drying them. Sometimes they've got a kiln, sometimes they're sun-drying them, and then they're being asked to lift them. So you can imagine the weight of that particular stack. Typically, the bricks will weigh around 2.5 kilograms. The women that are doing this, they're putting about 11 bricks on their heads, so you can imagine how fun it'd be to have 22, 25 kilograms on your head, and then being asked to carry them about 150 meters, dump them, come back, dump them, come back, dump them, come back. And can you imagine doing that for an hour? Can you imagine doing it for 16 hours with 40 degree plus heat and very little water? And then can you imagine doing it for 7 days a week, no day off, and then the next seven, 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 and the next seven, and the next seven, and the next seven. No public holidays, no annual leave. And the fact that all the work that you're doing, because it is work, it's definitely work, all the work, you're generating wealth, like the bricks are generating wealth, but you're getting none of the share of the wealth. It's like going to, we have some cushy jobs, right? Imagine just doing your cushy job and getting none of the wealth. Let alone doing this totally crap job and getting none of the wealth. And at IJM, we heard about these two guys that escaped from a situation like this. They ran away, the slave master found them, brought them back, and hacked off their hands. And so CNN covered it, so you can Google it. But the point being that that's what slavery is like. And so when the text has said that the Egyptians made their lives bitter with hard service, without mercy, that's what they were doing. You need to imagine that. Can you smell it? Can you hear it? Can you feel it? Can you imagine what it's like to watch your daughter? Because their family's indentured, right? Families, to watch your daughter being enslaved and being totally unable to help her. Or as a watching your husband being beaten and knowing that if you try to help your husband, that will be the last thing that you ever do. Can you imagine that? But that is the reality of life for, well, it's 40 million people, and we'll talk more. We're going to do Freedom Sunday. We're getting there, but it's 40 million people on our planet today. But that was what the Egyptians were doing to the Israelites. And you need to also probably bring into your head some Nazi imagery as well. It's that kind of thing. It's this concerted, we'll put the yellow star on you. We will shut down your business. We will only allow you to shop here. We will quarter you off and put you in a ghetto. If you know some of that Nazi history, it's that kind of persecution. It's people against a nation. And it's horrific. The brickyard, right? And so what I want to just focus on is the experience of what life is like in a brickyard. I want you to think about what that would do to your hands, to your feet, and to your identity, being treated like that without any rest. What would that do to you? And I want you to think briefly, just to step back to these questions of every heart or every community that we looked at last week. I'm just going to remind you of them. Who are we? Why are we here? How are we to live? And what are we to do? Like, they're the four questions of the heart that our hearts are answering. They're reaching for answers for that. I want you to think about what existence in the brickyard would do in terms of your answers to that question. Can you imagine that? Who am I? I'm a slave. Why are we here? I have no idea other than I need to meet these production quotas. How we live? Well, do whatever the taskmaster wants us to do. What are we to do? Just... And that's it. And what's your horizon like? What are you looking forward to? There's no holiday. There's nothing to look forward to. So I want to suggest to you that the Brickyard is marked by these, and what Brueggemann, this guy called Brueggemann, calls these five things. So he lists out, they're not even in any particular memorable form, so I'm just going to say them to you and you can try to remember them. But the Brickyard's marked by coercion. It's marked by competence. So you need to be competent in the Brickyard. You need to be able to produce quality work, like your bricks need to be good enough to be able to be, you know, sold. You need to be able to make the quantity, and you've got fixed quotas that you need to meet. So coercion, competence, quality, quantity, and quota. Well, three Q's and two C's, I guess. I guess you could get there. That's the Brickyard. Does that ring any bells with anyone? That sort of life, where your life is ruled by coercion, competence, quality, quantity, and quota. Where you're in a situation where you have KPIs that you can't meet. Anyone? Dave? Dave? Where you're in a relationship where apparently it's love, but there are so many conditions on the relationship that you're kind of just, the meaning of love is lost because the love is just that conditional. Maybe that's not a relationship you're in now, but maybe that's a relationship that you've experienced in the past where people are saying love to you, but actually it comes with so much wrapping and so much packaging. It's like, but that's not love. And you're on this, and you walk around these eggshells or this tightrope trying to perform, knowing that step either way and you're done. You know that experience? So the thing is that Brickyard, it's not an ancient concept. It's actually an insight into how we do life as humans. Not all the time. And in this little community, definitely not, which is awesome. But so often when we step out the side the door, we will find ourselves in relationships and in situations where it's simply messy power dynamics where other people are trying to exploit other people for their ends. So yeah, it could be the CEO with the crazy KPIs, but it could be the angry teacher as well, right? It could be a debt that you just can't meet, like there's just, you've just got repayments on a debt where it's like, I'm just at the whim of this bank. It could be an unappreciated wife or a mother. You might feel like you're in that Brickyard thing. But today it could be a father, you know? It could be a father like, yeah, I'd be super proud of you if you made that selective school. It's Brickyard language, right? So I think if you think about it, you seem to go, oh, there it is, there it is, there it is, there it is. So this ancient text becomes something that's actually, oh, wow, right. So what do we do? What do we do when we're in situations where it's just mindless productivity? That's what's being demanded of us, just mindless productivity. Where we're in these relationships of these power dynamics which are just coercive at best. Or what do we do also? And this was a thought that I had as I was reading this text. Because, you know, I don't know about you, but when you read this, right, like I instantly identify with the Israelites, right? I'm like, oh, okay, here I am, coerced. You know, that's me. And but then I realized, oh, maybe I'm doing the other stuff. Maybe I'm the one who's actually demanding productivity, demanding, putting all these conditional things on relationships. Maybe that's me. And I'd like to think that it wasn't, but if I think about some of my parenting incidences over the last week, I could say, yeah, look, I think I put that taskmaster hat on a few times the last week. So we're there, right? We're in it. It's kind of the water we just kind of swim in it, and so we don't really recognize it. But that's kind of how our world's kind of set up in these power dynamics of just people seeking to get one over the other. Brueggemann says, "We are all of us caught up in a way of life that yields only frantic hostility and desperate effort, which cannot finally pay off." So I don't know if he was having a bad day. I don't think it's entirely that, but that's part of it, isn't it? So is there any, so if you're in these situations, though, if you've got a boss who's putting that sort of pressure on you, like, what do you do? Is your only option for that to change is to exit from that boss? If you're in a relationship where there's those kind of dynamics, what do you do? Is your only option to exit the relationship? What do you do if you're in a debt where you're like, oh, I can't pay it off, so what do I exit the debt? Well, I can't. So is there a way to actually live free in the brickyard? Can you do that? Yes, you might long for the exit from the brickyard, but in the meantime, can you live free in the brickyard? Okay, well, that's what our story is about, right? So let's read on. So verse 15, guys. "Then Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, gave this order to the Hebrew midwives, Shiphrah and Puah. When you help the Hebrew women as they give birth, watch as they deliver. If the baby is a boy, kill him. If it is a girl, let her live. But because the midwives feared God, they refused to obey the king's order. They allowed the boys to live too. So the king of Egypt called for the midwives. 'Why have you done this?' he demanded. 'Why have you allowed the boys to live?' 'The Hebrew women are not like the Egyptian women,' the midwives replied. 'They are more vigorous and have their babies so quickly that we cannot get there in time.'" So God was good to the midwives, and isn't it? "And the Israelites continued to multiply, growing more and more powerful. And because the midwives feared God, he gave them families of their own. Then Pharaoh gave this order to all his people: 'Throw every newborn Hebrew boy into the Nile River, but you may let the girls live.'" So, wow, it's intense, right? Intense. Now, the Bible's really interesting in terms of who are the heroes in the Bible, right? Like, God, these stories, they have the weirdest heroes, right? So it's Pharaoh. Like, the antagonist is awesome, right? Pharaoh's like Hitler, right? He's a bad antagonist. He's perfectly cast. Yes, perfect. But who's the hero? The midwives. Are you serious? Where's the guy with the cape? It's the midwives, right? Could you be more lowly in society? You're a woman. Well, that's bad, right? And then you're a woman, and we learn later that these women don't have any families, so that's another rung down. They're just these insignificant little servants who would just be like this on the social standing, right? And so, but the story says, oh, it's Pharaoh versus the midwives. Okay. Now, I think that's really the core question of the brickyard, just so you know. The core question of the brickyard is, who's in charge? That's all people wonder about in the brickyard. It's like in a company, who's actually got the swing? And we'll follow that person. Like, and everyone's just looking. Who's got the swing? Same question in the brickyard. Who's in charge? Who's actually in charge of this thing? And Pharaoh obviously believes he's actually in charge of this thing. But our little midwives disagree. Now, verse 17 is the verse that everything hinges on in this story, guys. So if you find verse 17, everything hinges on verse 17. And you know what's interesting about verse 17? Not just this little chapter hinges on verse 17. The whole Exodus story hinges on verse 17. And then the whole Israelite story hinges on verse 17. And then the whole story of God's salvation of the whole world hinges on verse 17. Is that sounding too dramatic? Maybe, but I'm trying to keep you tracking. Here's what happens. They say five words. You know when iPhone comes out, like the new iPhone comes out, this changes everything. When it doesn't change anything, this is not one of those. These five words change everything. But the midwives feared God. So if the question of the brickyard is who's in charge, the midwives go, I mean, they put a thumbs up. No, they didn't. They did other things to Pharaoh, and which we can't do here. But and then they feared God. That's what they did. They feared God. And then they did the next thing. It says they did not do as the king of Egypt commanded. So they rejected the rule of the brickyard. That's what they did. They feared God. They rejected the rule of the brickyard, which is a really, 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 really difficult thing to do. They rejected the rule. Not playing by those rules, actually. No. And then they let the. And then it says, but they let the boys live. They enact the way of God. They choose to live God's way and to prioritize life. So what they do, they're in the, and it's so hard when you're in the brickyard, when you're in the company, when you're in that relationship, it is so hard to see above the water. But these guys, and I don't know how they do it, but suddenly they have this perspective. They're able to look up, whether they look up at the sky, I don't know what they do, and they go, you know, Pharaoh doesn't rule this brickyard. Pharaoh is not the ultimate authority. God is. And so they fear him. And what's interesting about fearing God, because we talk about fearing God, but we probably use the word, like the phrase trusting God, right? Like that's probably what we'd use. It's the same thing. The thing is, what they do is they don't just, it is a hard attitude, but to them it's kind of stupid to think that it's just a hard attitude. Because we'll talk about trusting God. It's like, yeah, I'm trusting God, but I'm doing the same thing I used to do. I'm just living like everyone else in the brickyard, but I'm trusting God. It's like, no, that's impossible. Because trusting God isn't just a hard attitude, it's a behavior. So in this scripture, it's just like, because they trusted God, they did this. And so for us, it's right. Just you say you trust God, but it's a behavior. It's an action. That's what trusting God is. It's a verb. So you reject the brickyard rule by acting differently. It doesn't stay as a, oh yeah, I trust you, God. It's a radical resistance by enacting a different behavior. So one of the things that Lucy, for example, is thinking about at the moment is Sabbath, right? And Sabbath is this thing that, and we'll get there in the story, but Sabbath is something that God told people to do. You got to rest. And when you're in the brickyard, you get no rest, but God comes to his people and says, you need to rest. And so that act of, you go, I'm trusting God, and then I'm going to take a Sabbath, and you're resting, that's your act of resistance. That's what it means to live not in the brickyard. It means to go, no. Despite all those pressures of productivity, I'm going to rest because I know that there's one that's greater than Pharaoh. So I don't know if you Sabbath this week, Lucy, but more power to you, sister. Keep Sabbathing. So you know in The Lord of the Rings, Galadriel says in Lord of the Rings, she says, the quest stands upon the edge of a knife, stray but a little and it will fail to the ruin of all. Yet hope remains while the company is strong. Remember that scene? That's what's going on here, right? This is the Frodo thing. What will the midwives do? And they go, we are going to choose to fear God. We're going to choose to reject the brickyard rule and enact the way of God. And there was not a shred of evidence around to suggest that God was in charge. Like, where was the evidence? They look around the brickyard. It's like, I'm sorry, it's dust and quota and coercion. Like, there's no God. He's left the building. And he must have left the building because we're suffering. So why would God allow suffering? He can't have, right? So he must have left the building. So you saying that God's in charge is a load of... He's clearly not. Pharaoh's in charge. Look at our lives. And the midwife's like, nope. He's the boss. And we're going to live differently. Do you know that place? Do you know that place where everything around you is telling you to live the way of the brickyard? Whether it's in a relationship, whether it's in work, whatever it is, that it's just going, line up, get a real job and pay off your mortgage. Whatever it is, I don't care what it is. They've hurt you, hurt them. Break the relationship. Do not forgive. You're better than that. Brickyard language, right? It's brickyard language. It's not the way of Jesus. But it's very, very hard to choose the way of Jesus. When all the brickyard is just saying, no. No. And there's an accusation here that comes in when you're at that decision point on this thing, right? This is the accusation that comes in. It's like, it's not going to make a lick of difference. It doesn't make any difference. It's all in your head. The whole thing. There's no God. Pharaoh's in charge. And what you do and your actions don't make any difference. You're suffering. look after yourself. You know, that's what comes in, right? It's just, it won't make any difference. Okay, and I'm not going to try to answer that question, but I'm going to let the text answer that question. Let's see if it makes any difference. Here's a little investigation for you. There's only one place in this whole chapter where it says that God does anything. So where's the one place in this chapter where God does something? Sorry? Verse 20, yeah. There's only one place. Now you could say, oh, but God made them multiply and God da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Yeah, you could. But the only place where this text says that God does anything is in verse, hope Dave's right, verse 20. And it says, so God was good to the midwives. So the text tells us that when you fear God, reject the rule of the brickyard, enact the way of God, you can expect God's blessing. That's what it tells us. It tells us that actually God sees the midwives and he does two things, right? He's good to them. What does it mean that God's good to you? Well, you think, oh, that means I get the promotion or I get a new boss or something changes like that. Well, no, in this situation, they don't exit the brickyard. But what happens is that the first thing that it says is that God blessed the people and multiplied them. So God's being good to the midwives, and the way that he shows he's good to the midwives is he multiplies the people. So when God comes into you and blesses your life, it's for others. It's for others. That's the way the blessing goes. And that's what he said to Abram. He said, you know, I bless you to be a blessing. And so he's like, oh, that's, and so the midwives fear God. And so God's like, I'm multiplying the people. I'm blessing the people. But then read on, because he also says to the midwives, he says he gives them families. And that's what I want you to know too. So yes, the blessing goes out, but God sees these women who are the lowest of the low, who haven't got any families. And he sees them and he sees what they do. And he says, I'm going to give you families because I love you and I care for you. And I know what you need. And I know that you stood up to Pharaoh when no one else did. And I love that about you. And I just want to bless you and give you what your heart is longing for. So I'm not going to preach a prosperity gospel. I want the text to answer this. But it just says that God blessed when this happened. He blessed others through you and then he blessed and met your needs. It's awesome. So, and that's why, guys, this is why... this is why I love this text, because I think it's a Father's Day text, okay? So you might be wondering, right? Okay, what happened to you in the cave? That's probably what you're thinking about, right? I was like, what happened? I mean, you're here, so like, I guess. What happened to you in the cave? Well, here's what happened, okay? So this thing, the panic went like this, and I could feel it just kind of my hands and everything. It was just, I'm like, I could actually get stuck here. Like, it was beginning to be like... Because these holes, right, some of them you go into them and you can't see the end of them yet. They go down and then you have to kind of wiggle through them, right? And I'm just in there. I can't see through. It's like, this is really bad. And all the consequences of thinking about getting stuck in a cave and things just start coming to me. But there was one thing that I kept in mind as I was in this squeeze, right? I realized that someone had gone before me. My brother. Now, if you've met my brother, he's a pocket rocket, but he is a pocket rocket. He was premature, I don't know, 2 months or something, and he never really made up for it. In stature. The point being, he's smaller, right? He went through the squeeze. But it was like, okay, my brother can do this. My brother can make it through. I'm not that much bigger than him. I reckon it's possible, actually. In fact, I know it's possible. I just need to keep going. And so lo and behold, popped out the other side. Very wiggly and a bit shaken, but it was interesting getting out the other side of it, right? It's like just feeling a little bit more, right? Yeah. Yeah. I can do caving. Never going through a squeeze again, but I can do caving. I don't know what it is for you this morning. I don't know what your squeeze is. I don't know what it is this morning. But I do want to say that the midwives, just think about the Bible story. Who do these guys remind you of? They remind us of David and Goliath, right? Like, that's the story that came to mind with me. And it also reminded me of Mary. You know, when there was that infanticide against Jesus, and Mary just trusting God when Herod was trying to kill all the babies again. It's the same thing, right? This killing of babies seems like a popular thing in history. And then ultimately, like, it reminds me, this story to me points me to Jesus. Because Jesus is ultimately the one that went before us, right? Scriptures say that he's the author and perfecter of our faith. Like, he never asks us to do something he hasn't already done. He just doesn't do that. So if you're in that tight spot, whatever it is, you're like, I cannot for the life of me find a way through. And I, let alone finding a way through, there's no way I'm performing your free acrobatics in this situation. And God's like, I know you can't do it. I know. I did it. Because all of this is impossible without a knowledge of the Father's love in your heart. And that's what I don't know how the midwives picked up their God thing, but they got some faith from somewhere. And they knew God. And it's the same for us, guys. Like, we have this thing in our brains called the reptilian part of our brain, and it doesn't think a lot. It just feels a lot. And all it's doing is working out, am I safe or not? That's the only question it has. Am I safe or not? And so any time you step into any room, like you'll be doing it right now, as you look around, you go, do I feel safe or don't I? And the way that you respond will be dictated by whether you feel safe or not. And friends, we spend, like, the reality in the brickyard is the message is you're not safe. No one is looking after you. You have no future. That's the reality of the brickyard. But then the Heavenly Father comes and says, you're safe. You are safe. And Jesus comes to earth and says, I want you to know my dad. Because if you know my dad, you'll live completely differently. Because you're safe. And so that's what he wants to say to our hearts this morning, you know? You're safe. And then you kind of pick it up and you pick the truth up and say to your own heart, heart, you're safe. But it's an interesting safe, isn't it? Because if you go at the end of the text, right, you see the persecution of the kids just picks up. Like, it's not like they're pulled out of the brickyard. But something in them is just radically changed. And they can be people who choose life in the midst of incredible pressure. So I want you to think about your one thing this week, right? Have you found one place? Have you thought of one place as I've been speaking? One place where there's that kind of press? Could be a relationship, could be a workplace, could be a debt. I don't know what it is for you. Have you found that one place in your head? And then just think, God, what's one thing I can do? If you're really real and you actually have my back, if you're really real and have my back, what's one way that I could reject the rule of the brickyard and actually live